Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series, a service of the American Institute of CPAs and the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants. This series features discussions with Chartered Global Management Accountants and other experts about the topics, trends, and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series. I'm Editorial Director Jack Hagel. In today's episode, Senior Editor Neil Amato speaks with Dan Griffiths about a technique called thought bridging and its role in our emotional intelligence. Dan is the Director of Strategic Planning at Tanner LLC, a Salt Lake City, Utah firm that provides assurance, tax, and consulting services. Dan is a CPA who holds the CGMA designation. Neil caught up with him at the AICPA Controllers Conference in Orlando, Florida. Here's Neil.
Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Pleasure.
How do you define thought bridging?
I define thought bridging as developing the capacity to understand how our thoughts are driving our emotions and ultimately the actions that we take. Breaking down what's going on in our own body and what's leading to the results that we're getting in our career, in our lives, in our professional interactions. And it's a tool and technique that helps us to change the thoughts that will ultimately lead to better emotions, actions, and results aligned with those thoughts.
Why sometimes do emotions get the best of us?
Emotions are the drivers of action. We can't take an action without it being linked first to an emotion. And sometimes the space between the thought that triggers the emotion, which triggers the action and the result, is so small that we just follow through that chain reaction without even having the time to think about it. Thought bridging helps us intervene on our own behalf before the emotion leads us to take an action that we might later regret.
So in your presentation, you talked about there being kind of a chemical brain function. I'm probably not saying the scientific part of it correctly, but tell me a little bit about that and how you learned about it.
I first got introduced to this concept through the AICPA Leadership Academy program. A woman named Gretchen Pisano, who's an executive coach, has studied the field of psychology and neuroscience in a very deep way at the Wharton School. She introduced that concept to Leadership Academy. And during that time, I had a real personal awakening in some ways. As accountants, we tend to focus on the things that we can analyze, the things that we can understand, and we pride ourselves on being logical and rational. And I see nothing wrong with that. Here's the problem. If we fail to recognize what's happening with the emotions that are coursing through our body, then we're not ultimately going to get the results that we want. And this isn't because we need to be emotional decision makers. It's because of how we're wired. Thoughts trigger emotions, which lead to actions and create results for us. And there's really no way of changing that process because it's a biological one. Every thought we have, every rational, logical thought we have, and every irrational, illogical thought we have can trigger an emotion and must trigger an emotion if we're going to take an action. And that's just how we're wired from a biological perspective. So understanding that and then being able to, not in a touchy-feely sense, but in a very pragmatic sense, get in touch with our own emotions and understand what's happening and what's driving our behavior. That's important to be effective leaders, to be effective at influencing others.
What does all this have to do with accounting?
Absolutely nothing. However, it has everything to do with career success, with leadership effectiveness, with our capacity to influence real change in our organizations. Because organizations are made up of people, and people are by nature emotional creatures. And all of the actions that we engage in, the behaviors we exhibit, are a function of those emotions. So getting to understand that process and how it works for us cultivating the self-awareness in the moment so we can recognize when emotional drivers might be taking charge of some of our behavior and leading to results that we may not want. That's critically important if we're going to be successful leaders in our organizations. So no, it's not accounting, but it's really important.
What are some everyday events that can trigger emotions in us that maybe we don't even think about?
One I love to use with people is I'll ask them the question, have you ever received an email that got you really mad? Almost the second you opened it, or the second you saw the person who had sent it and the subject line, you could feel your blood pressure rising. You could feel pressure right behind your forehead. You could feel the veins on the side of your neck popping out. That's a great example of a time when a little bit of restraint might be required. And thought bridging is a great technique to deal with that. So I ask people, think of a time when you had a strong emotional response to some kind of external trigger. And let's break that down. Let's talk about what that felt like, what that looked like, and try to have people identify what was the thought that triggered that strong gut response, that emotional trigger. What was the thought that triggered that emotion? And then what was the action you took that you may not have been very proud of? Let's say you fired an email back at the person who initially fired one at you, and it got you a result that was suboptimal. It destroyed your relationship. It didn't allow you to work collaboratively with someone that you needed to be able to work better with. You weren't as successful at influencing an outcome as you would have liked. It may have felt good at the moment to just fly off the handle and react to the emotion you were feeling. But that's what I'll have people start with, is just unpack that one instance where you had the strong emotional response. And don't only say, well, I thought he was a jerk, and I got angry, and I sent a nasty email, and I didn't get a good result. Break it down. What was the real thought behind he was a jerk? Was it, I've been violated? They've disrespected me? What was the thought, and in a more detailed sense? And then, how did it feel in my body? Did I feel the veins on the side of my neck start to pop out? Did I have this sick feeling in the pit of my stomach? What was the physical sensation that was going on? And the reason that's important is you have to be able to call those things out so that the next time you feel that, you can recognize what's going on in your own body. And then what was the action you took and the result you got? So the first thing I'll do is have people unpack a circumstance like that.
In your presentation, when you asked people to do that, you suddenly saw, you know, arms waving, you know, people just talking with their hands and just getting animated. I guess one thing that I just thought of was, do people ever use that example and use that strong emotion for a positive email they've received?
It's quite rare that people will share a positive example of a positive strong emotion. We tend to have a negativity bias, all of us do, and we will grab a hold of any bit of negative data.
Speaking of negativity that we kind of latch on to, you quoted Gretchen Pisano, who you mentioned from the Leadership Academy time, as saying that our brains are Velcro for negativity and Teflon for positivity. Tell me a little more about that, why we lean that way.
Yeah, psychologists and even neuroscientists refer to this as a negativity bias. Psychologists will call it something that's described as the fundamental attribution error. And it's a tendency that our brain has to grab a hold of every bit of negative data. And unless we exert conscious effort, the positive stuff bounces right off. Perhaps it's a survival mechanism. There's a part of our brain in the limbic system. It's down at the base of the brain. I won't get too geeky with the brain science on you. But there's a part of our brain that has a little scanner that's running in the background all the time. And it's asking two questions. Do you mean me harm? And do you have the capacity to carry it out? Do you have a gun? and do you intend to use it? And the challenge we all have is to make sure that we're aware that this scanner is on. Most of us are not immediately threatened in our day in and day out lives with some kind of physical harm. There isn't some tiger lurking in the grass that's trying to eat us. But our brain is looking for that tiger. And as soon as it thinks it's found one, it will immediately seize our attention. And not only our attention, but shut down the rational, logical parts of our brain. The places where language ability exists, the places where creative thought and the ability to make connections between unrelated ideas, all of those parts of the brain go dark the second that our limbic system seizes control in the way that I've just described.
You talked about the brain turning off in those events. So the concept of turning it off and then turning it back on, what exactly, a little deeper into that, what does it mean and why is it important for us in our professional and personal lives?
It's important for us to have the awareness of what's going on, because otherwise it's as if we are showing up to these critical moments, let's say in our professional experience, maybe they're big meetings, maybe they're important negotiations. We're showing up with our brains turned off. We're not our best self in those interactions. That's when we need our brain to work. And from a biological perspective, when we get triggered in this way, when we feel threatened, when our brain has told us that there might be somebody who means me harm and they may have the capacity to cause harm, as soon as that happens, we lose our cognitive function. The blood flow to that part of our brain is constrained, and if you were to hook somebody up to a brain monitor in that moment, the lights are on, but nobody's home. You would see no brain activity up there in the part of the brain that does the higher order thinking. The first step towards dealing with that is just accepting that that's a biological reality of who we are and how we're wired. So the next time that happens, we can develop strategies for turning our brain back on more quickly.
So why do certain sounds or other stimuli, you use the example of giggling babies, why do those things have an effect of turning our brain on? And maybe what are some other examples?
Yes, researchers have found that there are a number of things that can get the blood flowing again and turn our brain back on, so to speak. There's baby giggles that you mentioned. That one happens to be the sound that virtually for anyone that they've ever tested and hooked up to a brain scanner, that'll turn their brain back on in an instant. There are other strategies, though, that can be employed, and for each of us, it will be a little bit different. There's a group out of California called HeartMath that's done a lot of research in this area, and they hook people up to brain scans and monitors, and they try and identify what some of these things are that trigger increased brain activity in the neocortex, the part of the brain that does all of the higher-order thinking skills, right behind your forehead. That's the part we want turned on when we go into the big meeting, when we go into the negotiation. And that's the part that is the first one to get shut down as soon as our limbic system takes over. So these stimulus that we can go after for some people, it's a memory. It can be a memory of something that triggered feelings of gratitude for them, as one example. That's a powerful one. So it could be a picture of my grandmother, could be a picture of my family, could be one session I did. A woman shared that lavender hand cream is something that does her for that. It does that for her. It's a smell that reminds her of something that brings on these feelings of gratitude. And when that happens, you can immediately watch the reaction in the brain and how the blood flow opens back up, the neurons start firing again. You can measure the brain activity. And those are the things that we each have to identify for ourselves. What is it that's going to bring me back to rational and logical thought? What is it that's going to help me turn my brain back on?
You mentioned a picture of your family in your presentation. You used a photo of your kids sledding on a snowy day. Tell us what that photo showed, but also what I guess you didn't see in the photo or didn't notice when you took the photo.
I use that photo as an example of how blind we can sometimes be to the experiences that other people are having around us. There was a snow day, canceled school. I took a few hours off work so that I could take the kids sledding. And my two oldest kids were having a blast. My youngest was not. However, in the moment, I had no idea. I was completely clueless. I was taking pictures of the kids, and the picture that I show to drive home this point is a picture of my two oldest kids with the youngest sitting in the middle. The two oldest, big grins on their faces. I'm being a good dad, right? I'm taking them sledding. I took time off work to do this. And I assumed that everybody was having a great time. All I noticed was the smiles on the faces of my two oldest children. I didn't notice that my daughter sitting in the middle was actually crying. And it wasn't until I got home that my oldest daughter said, "Hey, Dad, you know, Sophia wasn't having a very good time sledding out there." And I said, "Really? What happened?" Went over and asked Sophia. Her little lips started quivering, and she complained about how cold it was, and I had no idea. I was completely oblivious. What's the lesson? Well, for each of us, we are, whether we like it or not, creating experiences for the people around us. And we are often very blind to the nature of those experiences. Maya Angelou famously said that people will forget what you say, they'll forget what you do, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. What emotions are we evoking in the people around us? What experience am I creating for my staff? What experience am I creating for my peers, for my boss? I've been on the receiving end of that email that set me off. Have I ever sent an email like that and inadvertently set someone else off? Will they remember how they felt when they opened that email? Probably. So as leaders, we have to cultivate the ability to perceive in real time the experience that we're creating for the people around us, the emotions that we're evoking in them.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.